Welcome back to another episode of Masked Monologues. Today, I'm excited to have Benjamin here with me. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us about what you do?
Thanks so much for having me, AKA girl. Yeah, this is my first ever anonymous podcast, but I'll introduce myself anyhow. I'm not anonymous, just you, right? I'm Ben Kintish. I go by Benjamin officially, but now we're friends, so you can call me Ben. I'm based out of Maryland, but what brings me here is I'm the creator of a new musical comedy called Life Review, the Hospice Musical. It's a new play inspired by my real life experiences working as a hospice chaplain. This goes back nearly 10 years ago when I was learning and practicing the art of chaplaincy in a residential hospital. I was visiting with the patients, hearing their stories. One night while driving home, I said to my wife, "Honey, I think these stories, they want to be songs." And she said, "Okay, get writing." And that night I started writing, and it's a long and winding road since then. But a few years later, I continued to write these song lyrics inspired by my experiences as a hospice chaplain, eventually found a couple of composer friends to help me, and then developed the play further over the years. More recently, we did two workshop performances right up until COVID. Unfortunately, that put a stop in our plans for a little bit. We can talk about that in a little bit, I'm sure. And then after COVID, since then, I've been doing some one-man performances. I've appeared at a fringe festival, done some private shows. So trying to still spread the message about this play and continuing to do good things with this project.
Okay, and now I just want to talk about you being a hospice chaplain. So that must be a difficult job, or I would say for me, it would be a difficult job. For those who are not familiar with what a hospice chaplain is or what your job entails, could you give us a brief overview?
Sure. First, I'll start with that word chaplain. That's a religious professional who focuses on ministering to people in spiritual distress. For people of an older generation, they tend to think of the chaplain on MASH. That was the priest who was helping out all the soldiers who were sad when their friends died or when they were dying themselves, that kind of thing. I think for a younger generation, most of us know about chaplains, if we do, because grandma was in the hospital and the nice chaplain would come by and visit or that kind of thing, right? Chaplains work in all manner of healthcare facilities. They work in jails and prisons. They work in sports organizations sometimes. But the idea is to provide spiritual care, spiritual support for people in their time of need. Now, in the hospice environment, hospice is a medical facility devoted to providing care for those who are seriously ill and getting ready to die. That's what hospice care is all about. So, hospice chaplain provides that spiritual care for those who are seriously ill and dying, as well as their loved ones. So that's the sort of overview of what they do. The nitty-gritty day-to-day, it's a lot of visiting. I mentioned in the genesis story of this play that it was in the room-to-room visits when I got to know the patients and heard their stories, and I was inspired to write the songs. So most hospice chaplains don't start writing songs from the experience, but we do, as a matter of technique, go from one room to the next. We knock on the door and we say, "Hello, would you like a visit?" If you're working in a big facility, you have a certain number of patients you're supposed to see every certain amount of time, so you plan accordingly. So that's what the work looks like. Now, you preface the question by saying it must be very hard. You're certainly not the first person to ask me that question or to state that statement. It is difficult work. While I'm not currently working as a chaplain, I'm currently working full-time as a music teacher. I just play a chaplain on stage. But when I was working as a chaplain, I'll tell you, the work was emotionally taxing, but not depressing and not defeating. In general, people are surprised about that with hospice work. I found it generally very buoyant. I found the work to be interesting and at times inspiring, very holy. The quiet prayers that I would make with seriously ill people and their loved ones, these are all like beautiful moments. So yes, challenging, but not undoable.
that surprises me. I would imagine that it might get a bit depressing over time, but as you were saying, there's those moments of optimism, the moments of light in such a depressing scene, because you say these people that you're speaking with have these stories, and when it mm-hmm. comes to stories, there's moments of joy, moments of sadness. You go through all the waves of emotion. And I want to know, you said you're popping in these visits. You've got about a couple, I don't know, is it a couple hundred, 100, I'd assume, or less than that a day where you have to go pop in, say hi to these people. I'm wondering, did you bring a notebook with you, or how did you turn these stories into songs?
Great question.
Do that afterward?
So just a point of clarification, the numbers you tossed out there are higher than is typical. A normal chaplain visit would run 30 minutes or so. So a very full day of visitation might be 5 or 6 visits, maybe 7 or 8, but more than that would be just too much emotionally. And you also have to do like paperwork in the computer, what they call charting, because in medical care, if you haven't written it down, it didn't happen. So even the chaplains have to do that. But that said, even if you're not a songwriter, you need to stay on top of note taking for visits, for your medical records, and to share with your care team. If you discover that so-and-so is really struggling, is it an emotional thing that you can help with, or is he uncomfortable because his catheter needs to be adjusted? Then you call the nurse and she'll take care of that. That's the team aspect of it. But in terms of remembering stuff for the purpose of songwriting, for me, not every visit resulted in a song. Some of the songs came from ideas or themes. Some of the songs were like a fictionalized version of a person's story. I don't know how much of a theater fan you are, aka girl, but I tell people that my play is a little bit like A Fiddler on the Roof meets Chorus Line set in a residential hospice. So the Fiddler on the Roof piece is arguing up with God in the heavens throughout the play. My main character, the rabbi chaplain, does that. And Chorus Line, because the different individuals step up and deliver what I call a musical monologue, their story and song. So that idea of stories and songs, that was something that I was doing from the beginning. And some of those songs were like, they felt like a biograph, almost like a ballad, 3 minutes that told the story of their life. Others were more like thematic. One song I wrote inspired by a real person I knew. He was a guy, he was in hospice only for about a week. He had a rapidly advancing condition and had chosen to forego additional treatment. And he was lucid, totally with it, very lively, funny, charismatic guy. And by the end of the week, this was a facility with 50 beds. Everyone knew him. The patients, the nurses, the doctors, the plus ones, they all knew this guy because he was so affable and so friendly and just made friends the whole time he was there until the end of his life. So I wrote a song about that, changing some biographical details, but I found the idea of it so moving that in the last week on Earth, all you want to do is make new friends. So I wrote a song to that effect. Other songs were more abstract. Some told stories. I tried to bring in variety. The other thing I tried to do as I created these songs, use different musical styles to reflect aspects of the people. The guy who wants to be friends because he's an elderly Jewish guy in his 80s, I figured he would have grown up listening to Frank Sinatra. So his song sounds Frank Sinatra, Perry Como. I have a very elderly African-American character. His music sound is gospel music because he was a Black church musician coming up. So I use some of the music signifiers to give us ideas about our characters as we get to meet them.
No, I entirely understand where you're coming from, especially as a writer and a songwriter. I want to know, did you have a musical background prior to writing these songs, or did they just start off as lyrics and then you thought, you know what, maybe I'll pick up a guitar or start doing some lessons, or maybe I'll pluck some notes at the piano and turn it into a song? Or did you have a friend or someone to help you create this idea and turn it into a tangible song that you could share with friends and family?
Yes, I'm definitely the lyrics guy. I always have been. I'm good with words. Out of the 16 songs in the full-length show, one is a Ben Kintish solo number where I wrote the music and words. The rest, the other 15, I wrote the words, and they were paired with the music of one of my two main composers, Jason Spiewak from New Jersey, Michael Miller from New York, additional music from Miriam Cook and Andy Basov. Four musicians, two of whom did the lion's share of the work. They got lyrics from me, sat on them for a while, went to the piano, did the stuff, and then they would send me back these scratch demos. And let me tell you, those were some of the most exciting emails I've ever gotten, because it's just the subject line, take a look. And then it's magic, because when you write words in a journal, and I'm holding up to the camera here, I always use these journals, preferably decorated for inspiration. When you write those lyrics in the journal book, hopefully they sound good to your ear. Maybe as you read them out loud, they have a nice cadence, yeah, the syllable lineup, all of that. But you don't really know what it's going to sound like as a song until it's paired with music. So those moments when I got the songs back were super exciting. And now that I've performed the work several times in some different venues, I've gotten a lot of really wonderful feedback from listeners who have said that the songs are really beautiful and moving, proud of what we've created, and very excited to see where we can bring this thing next.
No, I love that. I know what you're saying about just opening up the email and say, listen to this, and you're just thrilled to see what it sounds like, especially if you're collaborating with someone else and you brought half of it there, and then you just want to see how it all fits in and ties together. I want to know now, you say you started off with this poetry and this writing, and just from experience working with other lyricists, with songwriters, there's a difference between being a poet and writing a good story versus turning it into song lyrics, which, as just previously mentioned, it's those cadences, the rhythm, how it all fits together and it sounds, because it's musical. So that's an essential part of it. You have to take that in consideration, the rhythm and the meter. And I'm wondering how you learned that. Did you have a background in poetry or English, or did you go to the online, find out some a website, maybe YouTube videos? What resources did you use to learn that? Or maybe you already had it from previous experience. I'm not sure.
Yeah, happy to answer. So I've always had the gift for gab, and I've always been a good writer since I was a young kid. And I remember getting that compliment along the way. You have a distinct voice. When I wrote essays, when I wrote stories, you could hear my voice coming through. And so writing little poems and little stories and clever little rhymes always came naturally to me. I didn't realize that was a building block for songwriting until I was in my 20s, when I was in graduate school studying to be a cantor, that's a Jewish music minister. One of my classmates was a wildly talented composer. One day in class, and we had a tiny class, like five or six of us per grade in this tiny graduate school program and seminary. One day in class, he rolls in and he's like, "Hey guys, I'm writing some new Hanukkah songs. I've got the music. Anyone want to do the lyrics?" And I raised my hand. I said, "I'll do it." No one else had jumped in. I had never written a song, like a real, quote, real song before. And this guy was a very impressive musician. So what he had put together, I knew was going to sound cool. But I was like, yeah, what the hell? Let me try. And I had some good success with those co-writes. I think we did three or four songs together. And in that case, he had done the music and handed it to me and said, "I think it's about blah, blah, blah." So one was like about a Hanukkah party. And then I made a wacky scene and it came off well. So that was in my mid-20s when I discovered, okay, I can turn a nice phrase, I can co-write a song. And at that point, I don't think I had any real ambition to do songwriting per se. But it was nice to discover, like, oh, I could write some songs if I wanted to. Then fast forward to the beginning of this project, when I was in my mid-30s or early 30s was when this started. I'm now 44. And you were asking about some of the technique came through repetition and also I have been going to a songwriting retreat for a few years, so I should give credit there. For you listeners out there who like writing songs, if you can afford going to a retreat, it's a pretty awesome experience because you get away from real life. I think this is true for any creative person. I say afford because it's usually a pretty penny to go off somewhere. But the one I'm going to this summer, we stay at a college dorm. It's not at a fancy place. So the costs are reasonable. But what happens at a retreat, whether it's songwriting or poetry or painting, you go to a place and then you make and you make and you learn. But by getting away from real life, you can churn out a lot more material. And of course, get feedback from teachers and from fellow participants. So for me, it's been incredibly helpful, aka girl. Now I've done, I want to say 6 or 7 years in a row. And that first year, 6 or 7 years ago, was the year that I connected with Michael Miller at the retreats. And he's one of my two big composers. So we became friends and started that collaboration there. But in terms of the very technical stuff, I'll give you an example. So there's this nerdy term in songwriting and poetry called scansion. It's where the syllables lie. Mary had a little lamb whose fleece was white as snow. Everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go. And it's got like a very specific way that every few syllables hits a strong beat and so forth. And nursery rhymes are very good at that. So when you're a songwriter, you tend not to get all of the rhythm and all the rhyme correct the first time through. What I've learned is that when you do the editing process, you go back, you count how many syllables in each phrase, you look to see where the accents are. Do they fall in a natural place or an unnatural place? And are you okay with that? So that sort of editing process and refining, that I learned about almost entirely at the songwriting retreats from the leader there, Sue Horowitz, who's amazing, great songwriter too. If you guys like folk music, look up Sue Horowitz. She's wonderful. Yeah, so that was how I did it. And I'll tell you this, in addition to learning some of the technical nitty gritty at these retreats, the biggest thing is the doing. I'm reading a book right now about the creative process called The Work of Art. It's a huge and amazing book. If you like buying big books, buy it. If not, go to the library. But for all of you creative people, it's a book that is not to be missed. And it's this author interviewing creative people who do painting, songwriting, playwriting, you name it. And then talking with them at length about their creative process. And the one theme, they all have different processes, but the one theme that is common throughout is a sense of discipline for the making, that they structure their lives around time in the studio, or if they're songwriters, time sitting with their book open and their pencil moving, or what have you. So that's been impactful for me to read because this project has taken me nearly 10 years. And now I'm in the production phase, trying to do performances and so forth. I have another few more musicals in me, at least. I don't want the next few to take a decade each. So I'm trying to be a lot more disciplined about putting in the time, especially this summer. I'm a school teacher, so I've got miles of time over the summer. And right now, my second musical is called Birdfeeder, the musical. It's meant to be a children's play, much lighter topic than hospice care. And so it's funny and it's lively and silly, and I'm having a lot of fun writing those songs.
That's wonderful. I want to ask you about the production aspect of your musical, because it's one thing to write a musical, but it's a whole entire ball game to actually be involved in the production of it. So I want to know what your role as the writer is. Do you get to choose the performers? Do you have a say in that? Do you work with a team? And if so, who's on your team? How do you go back and forth and communicate about the ideas, incorporating both the musical aspect of it and the plot, the scene, the lyrics, and just make something that will wow everyone else?
So your question gets at what we call the creative team. So I'm pretty far along in the process in that we have a full-length musical and dialogue that's done. There's also a one-man version that's condensed that I can do by myself at fringe festivals or in house parties, that kind of thing. But what you're asking about in terms of the creative team and the production team is a question that becomes more relevant the next time we try to stand this thing up. Meaning, and that's theater jargon for actually put on the play. Where I'm sitting in my basement studio right now, I have a digital and physical version of the script that's sitting here. And if I get a call tomorrow from a theater that says we want to put on the play, we can get moving. Once that conversation begins, as soon as the business is worked out, like we want to pay for the thing and what are the dates and what's the money, the next question is who's the production team and who's the creative team? Meaning there's going to be someone usually with the theater who's the lead producer, and the producer is the person who's in charge of all of the business, all of the people, all of the schedule, all of the money. The director is the lead creative who leads rehearsals and tells the actors where to stand and how to emote and how to deliver the lines. You have a music director who's in charge of playing piano, leading the singing and rehearsals, making musical decisions. If there's a pit orchestra, they're also in charge of that. You also get a costumer, set designer, makeup person, sound person. There's a growing team if you have a so-called production. I have not yet done the production to the point of having costumes or props. The biggest production we did was right before COVID. In fact, for you listeners, if you check out my website, lifereviewmusical.com, right after you land on the page, you see this trailer video, which is really great. And it has live footage from this performance that happened a month and a half before COVID. So what you'll see is actors and actresses performing, and they're really into it, but they are holding notebooks. So we call that performing from books, and or with book in hand, I think is the term. So that's something you do when you're like, not all the way there, right? It was still a moving production and the audience clapped and laughed and cried and all that good stuff. But because we didn't have the costumes and the props, we didn't need to have those people on the team. So that I think next week next month I were to do a one-man show, I would be lead producer, and it's a very simple production because it's like, where do I need to be? Who's my piano player going to be? Do I need to arrange for any simple sound equipment? If it's anything that looks more like a theatrical production, then we're talking about a production team and a creative team where there's many more decisions to be made.
I love how you talked about, you know, the different roles people have on the team, the entire creative team as a whole, and how they execute the play, the musical theater play, the libretto, if you're doing a musical, whatever we want to call it. I'm not sure what the exact terminology is there, just because I'm not someone who's done a lot of musical theater before. I've done some here and there, but I'm not someone who's well-versed in that area. But I want to ask you now, doing this writing, doing this production, I want to know how has impacted the performance community, because I've had some conversations with other performers in the past, and they said that they were at a boom right before COVID hit, and everything was blooming, it was going all well, and then COVID hit, and some of them were unable to recover afterwards.
Are you hearing these pained noises?
Yes, we're all hearing them.
Yeah, so I've got my own COVID misery story. I'll make it relatively brief, but there's a silver lining. So as I was telling earlier, we had two what we call workshop productions prior to COVID. One was summer of 2019. That was like a concert version of the show where we sang 10 songs and had narration. And then the big show in January of 2020, that was with the full show with intermission and dialogue, and I think we did 14 songs for that one. We had a piano player and a drummer, and it was really cool. So that performance was one of the most exciting nights of my life, like up there with my wedding and the birth of my child, because I'd been working at that point for 7 or 8 years and this thing happened. It was in a big room that was standing room only, so over 200 people showed up, which is a ton of people for a play that no one's ever heard of before. So it felt like an amazing night. That was January 20th, 2020. So that was, what, 2 months before all of musical theater was shut down or live theater shut down everywhere. So the big question, how did it affect me in so many ways? One, there was a sense that the play was going along up a hill or even taken off like a rocket ship. That upward progress was halted immediately and totally because you couldn't perform for people, at least not in the ways that we thought about it conventionally. No live audiences in contained theaters. Emotionally, the excitement of the big show in January, that standing room only audience, and how beautifully they embraced the show, that was a mega high. And then to have the world shut down and with it, apparently my dreams of this thing taking off, that was emotionally devastating for me. So I went through a period of brief depression that was really a struggle. And I heard similar stories from other creatives. In fact, I worked with a coach, shout out to Alex Paulting, who had her Broadway dreams dashed. She's a professional actress, and she had just signed a contract to be in an off-Broadway play. So a very big deal for her career. And I think rehearsals were meant to start April 1st, 2020. She also had her dreams on ice. So I mentioned that because she and I worked together through this time, and we could commiserate about how sad we were and disappointed we were that our hoped for dreams seemed to have been dashed. However, she said this very important wisdom several weeks in. She said, Ben, if you want to keep your project going, you're going to have to pivot. If you don't mind keeping it in a drawer for 2 or 3 years, then you can do that. And we don't have to meet together and you don't have to do anything. And I thought about it and I thought, no, I don't want this thing to just like die and go in a drawer and never be heard from again. So what Alex suggested, and I eventually listened to after some resistance, was to take the full-length play and condense it into a one-man show, cabaret style, so just songs and a little bit of narration in between. This was a big piece of work to rewrite the play that way, but it worked, I believe, and the upside was I was able to perform from this very space. The wall behind me, aka girl right now, this is the day meeting version with art behind me. But when I do a performance, I've got some long poles and curtains that hang on the back wall, turns it into a black wall. And then it looks like a mini theater. And I stand up and I sing the songs. And I've got all of the accompaniment recorded digital piano. So I don't even need to bring in a live player. So I was able to do that one man condensed version about a dozen times during the COVID pandemic. I performed it for some professional conferences. I did a big fundraiser, did some synagogue shows. One highlight, a big nursing home where I used to work as a chaplain intern hired me to perform this for their people, their residents, and they used the TV system to pipe it to all of the different TVs in the room. So hundreds of residents were able to see the show without getting out of their bed. So it was a wacky time and a difficult time to be a live performer, but the upside is having created this one-man show and also gotten a lot of experience performing for the laptop audience, now I'm able to do it. Right now, I'm making plans for the next house show, the next Fringe Festival, right? But I can also do a streaming performance from this very space to perform the one-man show and share this beautiful music with people anywhere in the world without the additional cost of travel. So that's an upside from the COVID challenges. Even separate from the streaming piece, the fact that I'm able to present the show in a condensed way so that I can do a Fringe Festival or a one-act festival, that gives me some more opportunities to share the work with more audiences.
Yes, it's funny when you're faced with adversity, you always seem to find a different path or just find a way to overcome it and do something different. It's not exactly the same. Maybe it's not what you expected, but you can still create something amazing and beautiful out of it. I want to thank you so much for joining me today on this podcast. And I want to ask you, where can people find you if they want to connect with you? Do you have any social media platforms? I know you have a website. Do you mind shouting out to it? And just
I am happy to share all of the... Yes. So the website is lifereviewmusical.com, LIFEREVIEWMUSICAL.com, lifereviewmusical.com. On that website, you can see a great trailer video with footage from our live performance before COVID. There's a ton of podcast links. If you found the story of our history and development interesting, there's a longer version of same with photos that you can check out. That's the website, lifereviewmusical.com. I'm also super active on Instagram. The IG handle is at Life Review Musical. So check me out there for photos. I'm starting a new video series of the 100 opportunities, trying to see if by the end of the summer I can get 100 rejections as I try to make new connections and new possibilities for this project. So stay tuned for that.
Thank you so much for sharing all your projects with us. And we hope to see the rest of your projects on your Instagram and your website. And please do connect with Ben. I want to thank you for joining us and listening to this podcast episode. If you like this episode and you want more episodes like this, then please leave a review and share with a friend or family member.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to be here.